Messages from the house.
February the 10th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 258, Charter Schools Funding, ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2. House Joint Resolution number 8, Equine Resources, ayes 58, excused 2. February the 10th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 85, Motor Vehicle Chain Law, ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill number 144, Transparency in Government, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House Bill number 169, Mortgage Loan Originators, ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill number 179, Phase 2 Study, I-80 Tolling, ayes 58, noes 6, excused 2. House Bill number 215, Tax Exempt for Renewable Resources, ayes 55, noes 2, excused 2, conflict 1. House Bill number 230, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax 2, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1. Excused 2. House Bill number 239, Bighorn Basin Discovery Center, ayes 51, noes 7, excused 2. House Bill 248, School Facilities Remedies Criteria, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House Bill number 255, School Districts Kindergarten Programs, ayes 58, noes 0, excused 2. House Bill 279, Statement of Consideration Review, ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2. House Bill 281, Telemedicine State System, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House Bill number 294, Prescription Drug Database, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House Bill number 295, Western States Energy and Environment Symposium, ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 297, Simple Assault, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. And House Joint Resolution 2, Adequate Funding for I-80 as a Critical Freight Route, ayes 58, excused 2. Patty Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Von Bladeren.
Mr. President, could I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Here you go, Bill.
Fellow senators up in the North and South Gallery are members of this year's class of the Gillette Area Leadership Institute. Would you please welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome. We hope you enjoy your day. Senator Johnson.
Today is obviously Leadership Day for our communities. And in the West Gallery, if they'll stand up, I would like you to please welcome Leadership Wyoming.
Welcome. House bills and first reading. House Bill 231, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 231, sponsored by Representative Harvey, Motor Vehicle Accidents, Serious Bodily Injury or Death, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicles. Passed the House on third reading in amended form. Ayes 34, no 25, excused 1.
House Bill 231 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 258, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 258, sponsored by Representative Edmonds, Charter School Funding, an Act Relating to Charter Schools. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2.
House Bill 258 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Joint Resolution 8, first reading of the Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 8, sponsored by Representative Wallace, Equine Resources, a joint resolution urging Congress to oppose federal legislation that interferes with the state's ability to direct the transport or processing of horses. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Joint Resolution number 8 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. Reports from standing committees. Senator Johnson.
Could I have privilege of the floor once again?
You may.
Thank you. As I will repeat, today is Leadership Day. Would you please recognize the Junior Leadership Group of Laramie County? It's a program of the Greater Cheyenne Chamber of Commerce, and they are all juniors attending the high schools in Laramie County. Will you please stand?
Welcome to the Senate today. Okay, reports from standing committees. Are you listening?
February the 10th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 6, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 10th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 225, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 10th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 48, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Considerations of bills in general file, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We are at that order of business. Consideration of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Thank you. Senator DiCaria.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The next section for our consideration is Section 24. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move we're still in Section 2 of the budget. We're on Section 24, Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources at page 12 of your budget. And for an explanation, I turn it over to Senator Massey, who will also answer a prior question, I think.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a prior question with regard to Civil Air Patrol supplies. A little bit more of a clarification, and if I still don't have enough information, let me know. But the $33,000 in supplies is used for maintenance and operations for search and rescue operations by the Civil Air Patrol. And the fleet of Cessnas are owned by a national corporation and are allocated or loaned to the state for the purposes of the Civil Air Patrol when they're needed. With regard to Agency 24, State Parks and Cultural Resources, it's a department with a $61 million biannual budget and 275 employees. $200,000 is being appropriated in one-time general fund to assist the city of Cody with the construction of a World War II memorial monument. $50,000 in addition will be contributed by local fundraising. $20,000 in general fund for administrative costs to administer the cultural trust fund. Its $11.5 million endowment produces enough revenue to issue roughly about $400,000 a year in grants. And the $20,000 is needed in order to support the travel of the board that makes the decisions and reviews the grants, as well as to conduct site visits to ensure the grant funds are being expended properly. And then $280,000 in general fund to support increased costs of sanitation contracts and utilities at the various state parks and historic sites. Be glad to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions on Section 24. Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $20,000 for the Cultural Trust Fund administrative costs, am I right in thinking that they're not allowed to use their interest, their grant funds for administration?
Senator Massey?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The earnings off the endowment cannot be used for administration.
Further discussion on Section 24? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 24, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 24 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 27. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 27, School Facilities Commission. This is the area where we do pay for the school capital construction. You'll recall that our goal was to provide about $400 million of capital construction every biennium, $200 million per year. Last year, because of budget constraints, we were not able to fund it. We only spent appropriated $337 million. The School Facilities Commissions would have liked us to restore that because they do believe there's construction capacity in the state and there are adequate needs to supply that. And in addition, the $337 million that we put out has lost as, well, I would say at least as of the time in December that we had our budget hearings, there was a sense that the ability or the stretch of those dollars was about, by inflation, was about $40 million less. So if you wanted to achieve $400 million, they could have absorbed about $440 million worth of construction needs. The governor originally made a recommendation of about another $30 to $40 million for this agency. When the new Craig estimates came out, he took all of the money out of the additional money out of school facilities commissions. The JAC followed those recommendations. There are only two items in this budget that were added there on your budget at page 14. These address the Snowy Range Academy. Those of you may recall last year we put in a bill directing a direction that the School Facilities Commission pick up the lease payments for the Snowy Range Academy. The Facilities Commission determined that they were not capable, even with that prior language, to pick up the entire lease payments. The Commission went back and looked at some of our leasing regulations for school facilities and concluded that what we can pay for is essentially the base rent, but you have to make up all of the differences of the payment. The leasing regulations that we have require that if you want to go out and lease a building, you have to have a triple net lease so that all of the expenses, all the major maintenance, all of the everything but utilities is picked up by the lessor. In this instance, the Snowy Range Academy already had a very favorable, typical commercial lease, which provided that they have to pay a base rent component, they have to pay a component for tenant improvements, and they have to pay part of the common area maintenance, the CAM charges. And when you brought all those commercial terms into the lexicon of the Facilities Commission, they simply said, well, we can't pay for everything. Even though by having designed this lease the way they did, everyone agrees that the lease payments, including all the CAM charges, the base rent, everything is lower than commercial rates. They were provided a very favorable lease by their landlord. So what this does is said, pick up the entire base rent, pick up the CAM charges, and then you still have the issue of the major maintenance dollars, and that is, are they entitled to any of those dollars? And we were provided to hear as saying, well, you can get some of those payments, but not to the extent there is any duplication. So the Facilities Commission has to take a look at the leases, analyze what's in those common area maintenance charges, and to the extent that there's duplication, they have to reduce and not pay those. But we know there are some areas, for example, HVAC, some other portions of that lease that are not duplicated, and if you don't give the facility some major maintenance dollars, they end up having to use their foundation dollars to pay for those. So the nature of these amendments is to say pay the entire lease payments, pay some major maintenance, make sure there's no duplication, and try to address the that issue. If there's no questions, we'll go to the next item and call for the question.
Any discussion on Section 27? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 27, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 27 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 33.
I went to 39. Was 33 the Board of Cosmetology? And Mr. Chairman, I move the Section 33 Board of Cosmetologies for an explanation. Turn it over to Senator Townsend.
Senator Townsend.
I just have to move my eyebrows a little bit, and then I'll be ready. Actually, the Cosmetology Board is does a lot of business. I was surprised when we looked into this. It's a what it is a self-sufficient board, and the state treasurer deposits all the revenues received in an earmarked fund, and 2% of the monies collected are then deposited in the general fund for administrative costs. They their revenue is over $500,000 and growing, and they are running out of they need more people to deal with the licenses and all the things that they do. Therefore, the governor recommended that they he recommended the $88,945 that they ask for to make from they end up with two new employees from a part-time to a full-time and a half-time into the full. So they ended up with two full-time people to help do what they need to do. It is self-sufficient. It I think with the money they get with this, they'll be able to sustain their own and do their thing. Their budget is on page 35 of the budget bill, and we didn't change a thing. So, any more questions?
Any further discussion on Section 33? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 33, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 33 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 39. Senator Nicholas.
I move Section 39, Wildlife Natural Resource Trust. It's on your cheat sheet, page 7, and on your bill, page 15. For an explanation of the agency, I turn it over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if you look at line 7 on page 15, basically what we did there was we gave the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust account in the area of the trust projects another $1 million. That was something the governor did not recommend. That was a JAC recommendation. He had originally recommended some money go into the trust fund in the trust account itself. However, due to the reduction in revenues, that was not put forward. But we wanted to make sure that the projects that these guys wanted to work could. As a partial disclosure, I believe that our farm and ranch had some money in the previous year's funding, but I don't believe it's in this year's funding. And I think the DEQ is going to make sure that we continue to have a dry stream anyway because of water quality, so it's probably moot. But I would ask that for your favorable consideration of the JAC's recommendation on the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund.
Any further discussion on Section 39? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification that all the projects were planned for, they'll continue under that $6 million?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I caught part of the question, and so let me know if I missed it. With this $1 million on top of the interest that's going to be generated from the corpus, and you know how the interest rates are these days, they will not have as much money next year as they did this year in order to fund programs.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just following up on that a little bit, if I remember right, what we appropriated almost, I guess, $6 million or so last year to that for projects, plus then they were also able to spend what was generated out of the endowment trust. And so with the additional million, are you saying that, or did the, not you, but did the trust, are they out of money? Are they out of money for the biennium if this isn't approved?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, they will get the interest off of their corpus.
Further discussion on Section 39? Senator Bebout.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if they get their interest off their corpus, why are we giving them another $1 million?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Chairman, the other funds, that's at $5,152,500. That was an assumption that we made last year. And we all know what happened to the stock market and income. And so the $5,152,500, it remains in the budget as $5,152,500. But, folks, there isn't $5,152,500 there. What we did is that we put another $1 million in there because we knew that the income off the trust fund had went down. And we wanted to put something in there to make sure that what was going to happen and occur would continue to occur. If you want, we can talk directly with the state treasurer, find out exactly what that number is, get back to you on second, so we can have exactly right down to the dollar as what we need to put in to hold harmless.
Question on Section 39. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 39, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 39 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 40. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, I move Section 40 Game and Fish Commission at page 16 of your bill and page 7 of your cheat sheet for an explanation of the budget. I'll turn it over to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 40 Game and Fish Commission, we didn't do much with their budget. We did reduce the wolf management appropriations, the governor's rec. Reduced that by $260,000 out of general funds. This was based on the testimony received from the department to reflect more accurately the expected wolf depredation reimbursements or payments. The other thing we did on this budget, we added a footnote. We talked a little bit about the sage-grouse game farm with Game and Fish, and so in a footnote we added language requiring research for reporting to the TRW committee in their October 2009 committee meeting. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, just for so the Appropriation Committee knows, TRW just had a bill in committee that came out, and it's got April 1st. That's a good day for St. Cross. So we probably ought to put an amendment on there tomorrow and get those on the same date.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the wolf management, my understanding is to manage wolves, it's $2.2 million for a two-year period. As I also understand, we lost management with less than actually about 5 months of wolf management, that we actually had it, which means that we use 5/24 of the time for wolf management, and the check we got back from Game and Fish was $200,000. Somehow, I'm not sure those figures jive. Where'd the rest of the money go for the other 19 months of operating wolf management? Or, to put it another way, I understand administrative costs of mailing a check back from Game and Fish. It's expensive and it's difficult. But to say that it ran to the tune of $1.4 million, I hope it came first class.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's $1.4 million in unused salary that's going to be reverting. And so there was two different appropriations, one for individuals, staff, and salaries, and one for damage claims for wolves. $1.4 million is reverting as a result of unused salaries. And with regard to the wolf deprivation, that was originally an appropriation of $540,000. $104,860.87 has been paid out. There's $3,431.65 in claims in the pipeline. And the estimate was that there would be a need for roughly $170,000 next year in order to pay wolf damages. And the remaining a balance, therefore, was brought back in by the Appropriations Committee back into the general fund. The testimony with regard to the use of these funds is that if the Game and Fish did not have the funds, since wolves technically are still considered trophy game in certain parts of Wyoming, their deprivations would need to be covered by the Game and Fish Department and taken out of license fees revenue, even though the federal government is still managing it. There's nothing we can do about that in the budget bill. That's a matter of policy through a bill, through statutory changes. However, we did try to tighten up the use of that wolf deprivation money as much as possible.
Further discussion on Section 40. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 40, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 40 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 42. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what you're going to see, there's no section here to move, Mr. Chairman, because Section 42, while it is there, it's a geological survey. We are doing some more CO2 sequestration. And we move the funding source to the AML funds. Now, when you see these footnotes where we say that the move to Section 300, all we've done is because the AML dollars are being administered through a Section 300 in the budget. When we get to that budget, you'll see that these things will be itemized and listed. And we're addressing that. So in this case, there's no general fund dollars to support or to change that organization. We will re-review it later when you see it. If you want to see the footnote, you can tie this footnote to your Section 300. But as a consequence of that, Mr. Chairman, there's no section to move with respect to the geological survey. That takes us to Section 45. And I move Section 45, Department of Transportation. And for an explanation of the bill, that section, which is page 17 of your bill, page 8 of your cheat sheet, we turn it over to Senator Townsend.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The governor on this agency authorized $7 million to the airport improvements, of which is still in there. He denied $8,840,000 $100,000, but there's still $66 million left in that airport improvement section. The governor also recommended $50 million to go to the highway construction cost increases, and JAC has denied that. And let's see, net does is increase the supplemental budget by $7 million to the Department of Transportation.
Senator Nicholas.
And I just point out to folks that there are two major expenditures the governor recommended that the JAC did not recommend that really allow for two things. One is it develops more savings into the rainy day account, the LSRA. The second thing is it allowed us to pay for cash for the labs. The two major expenditure items are here, the $50 million for highways. JAC felt that we funded them adequately in the budget. As you know, there may be some more stimulus dollars available, but we felt like notwithstanding that, there just wasn't enough money. And the second area was property taxes that are moving through. Between the two of them, $39 million plus $50 million, that generated $90 million of more available spending that above and beyond what the governor did. What that allowed us to do is retain the $37 million that we had put into savings for the capital complex improvements, both the remodeling of this building as well as the potential construction of the state office building, which we'll be talking about later. That $37 million in the governor's rec was spent. He applied those dollars to the construction of the joint labs, the biosafety level 3 labs in Cheyenne and in Laramie. What we did was pull the $37 million back and say, no, we want to keep those because we have these projects that are important to us. We saved the dollars for that purpose. But in order to make our budgets balance and to be able to pay for the general funds, among other things, we were unable to fund the $50 million additional dollars for roads. You'll recall we have about $200 million already in. And we, as I pointed out, we pulled out the tax, which we felt was something that the property tax relief, which is something the floors would debate. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Section 45? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One on the $37 million that was just mentioned for the capital, that reserve. Is that going to stay in reserve, or is that like so that it would be available if we get in trouble next year? Or is it likely to start getting spent during the coming year?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, it is in a reserve that is off profile, so it's not something you'll see on the goldenrod. To my knowledge, based upon the JAC recs, there is no effort to spend those dollars. Having said that, you'll see that later on in this bill that we have recommended the level 3 planning for the final standings for the state office building. If we come back and we have the resources to build the state office building, it will be planned and it will be ready to go, provided everybody agrees. That's about a $4 million expenditure that you'll see later in the budget. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. Our recommendation is, and you'll see when we get there, that we make a recommendation for the Level 3 final studies with some specific criteria, and the $37 million is there available. We come back and there's not enough money to build that office building. The $37 million is still in reserve and it could be spent for anything that we choose to spend it on.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, again, two questions. One, which section is that $4 million in? It's, I gather it's somewhere back in the budget. And second question, Mr. Chairman, is $7 million airports improvements is a pretty big ticket item in the context of this whole budget. Could we have a little more explanation as to why that's a good idea?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the airports, I could give you the list of priorities that the Department of Transportation gave us for the following airports that if the $7 million is sustained, that they would begin to start work on. One is Saratoga, and it's The project description is Recon Apron and TW. There's the next one is Buffalo. And by the way, the Saratoga Airport has matching funds to go along with a general fund of $1.8 million. Buffalo is next. It's a rehab, some work and some overlay work there at the Buffalo Airport. And it's $1.7 million for that. The Lander Airport's next, and it requires some land near the fairgrounds for the use of the Lander Airport. And that also is matched, and that's $2 million. And then finally, some work at the Cheyenne Airport, reconstruction work out there. A bunch of letters and numbers follow that I don't think make much sense to anyone. And it's $2.2 million, and that uses up to $7 million.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, to follow up that, and then I'll address the issue about the budget or the, where the $4 million is. With respect to the things that we approved, recognize that the $7 million, among other things, is a one-time dollar expenditure, and two, is generally capital in nature. While not all these things had unanimity among the JAC, and they don't always, I think there was a belief that we need to continue to work on our airports, that having transportation within the state is important for tourism and a variety of other things. It injects one-time dollars of capital construction into parts of the state that wouldn't otherwise do it. That with respect to the highway dollars, we have a lot of dollars in there. We expect that and are hopeful that maybe we'll see some more stimulus dollars there. We weren't necessarily anticipating stimulus dollars to arrive at the area of the airports, but they may, and things may change. So the real two criteria, though, I think, were there was a need. It's one-time dollars and it's capital construction that we thought would help the stimulus and or keep our economy going. And if you don't agree with those, fair enough, take it out. But remember, they're one-time expenditures. And then going to the next question with respect to the level $3 for the state office building, all of those dollars and the capital constructions are in section. I want to say section 3 of the budget. So it's, but yeah, 36. But we'll hit that in the next section. So we fit these are the operating budgets in the section 2. Section 3 is the all of the capital construction that we'll be going to as soon as we complete this section of the budget.
Further discussion on section 45, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I realize this may be pushing a little bit. But do you have any idea, as I understand the House is back in Washington, has passed their stimulus and the Senate has agreed or maybe passed theirs? And so theoretically, where do we wind up in the mix? I'm sure we won't be top of the list, but do you know what kind of dollars we're going to get and whether they're restricted or how restrictive that spending will be?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, we do have an email that it was an AP news release with respect to the House position. And there are significant proposed spending for all states, including the state of Wyoming. It is believed that the Senate will not be so generous with respect to their stimulus dollars. But for example, in the AP news release with respect to the House position, there was on the order of magnitude of about $200 million for highways. There was about $100 million for state aid. There was an undetermined amount in Department of Health, which may be huge, in the order of $10 to $100 million, depending on what they do with the FMAP and those sorts of things. But one of the biggest interesting areas was the general state aid, $100 million, uncommitted, and the states having to do with it. There's also an indication that the dollars that flow down through the capital construction for highways is intended to be ready for shovel-ready projects, so that if a state can't use it, if they don't have shovel-ready projects, their dollars will become released to other states. And so those states that have shovel-ready projects in that are ready to go can consume those dollars and may be able to grab dollars that other states could not use. WIDOT has been, we, of course, in Wyoming have lots of shovel-ready projects. We always have. YDOT has attended to that. They're getting their projects ready, and they'll to whatever is there, I think we can consume. The Senate is meeting today. I know that the governor's office has corresponded or communicated with the our delegation, and they've not yet been able to determine what's in the Senate bill. I mean, I guess that's the cool thing about being in Washington. You get to vote on things you can't even see. We ought to try that here. I'll bring the budget. You guys just vote for it. But with that in mind, we don't know. On second reading, what I propose to do is, I mean, the question is, how do we do that? The stimulus package is unlikely to be completed in a fashion that we can respond to it as a body prior to the time that we leave here. And so we're working on a second reading amendment that you'll have a chance to see tomorrow. The last touches will be put on now, but the notion is there are some things in the budget bill or the stimulus, for example, earmarked for highways, that we can all say redistribute to the highways. There's another group of dollars that may be unattached, unidentified, that we as a legislature will be out of session, but we have an interest in knowing what the governor is going to do. And so the proposal is to take all that money, dump it into an account, much like we did for AML, where we said all the AML funds come into an AML account. That way we've grabbed them, we've identified them, and then because some of these things are time sensitive and we want to have the opportunity for the governor to get them out and spend quickly, we say provide the legislature through the JAC and leadership a list of everything that you propose to you, the dollars, and if we don't call into special session, the dollars can be spent, say, within 21 days. So there, we are attentive to this. We think there is a solution to that, and on second reading, we'll bring back to you some recommendations. If there are no further questions, Mr. Chairman, on the highways, I'd call for the question.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 45, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 45 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 48. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chuck. Who are you, Mr. Chairman? And I move Section 48, Department of Health. And I'll explain that. You recall this is something that we've gone over before. And just to refresh your recollection, the real guts of what we did in for Department of Health are found in Section 300, because we had to address it separately. But as you'll recall, the governor came in with about $14 million of recommended expenditure. When he made that recommendation, he had not addressed either adult waivers, adult disability waivers, or children waivers, nor had he dealt with or addressed the developmental disabilities preschools. Either that he had not addressed their statutory required external cost adjustment, nor had he dealt with the increased enrollment. Then post to that, the Department of Revenue or Health came to us and said, look, we have another problem. Our Medicaid claims are going up, and we think there's about a $33 million shortfall. In the handout that you had this morning, if you look at it to the it'd be page 4 of that document, you'll see the summary of what really takes place here, where you had about $14 million of governor's recommendations. You have a $33 million shortfall up on top, and you have the DD waivers request. And then over on the last page, which is page 5, if I've got that right, page 5 is a breakdown of the Department of Health budget, Medicaid budget by category, that shows how they calculated the shortfall of $33 million. So what we've done in total is this. We've provided that the Department of Health can use flex dollars, their 100 series payroll dollars, that they can use those dollars for non-payroll events. Now, to do that, they need to go through the governors and get a B-11 process. When you're talking about, and my recollection is their I want to say that their payroll is in the order of Well, it's not on the sheet. I think it's, I'll look at it here, but I want to say $300+ million, $300-700 for their section ones. I'll find it here. All right. No, just the, they had told us, folks, that they anticipated about $11 million worth of reversions in their Section 100s. But their total Section 100 is huge. I'll find that number for you. But their total payroll dollars, they have a lot of opportunity to move monies around. So what we've said is you can use your Section 100s. In addition, they anticipate about $4 to $5 million of reversions this year to come in now from last year. We said you could add those to the $20 million reserve in the auditor's office, and then we said what you do is work within the dollars that you have. That is the $11 million of reversions, $20 million of auditor dollars, and $4 million of reversions. And you make this thing work. We're giving you more flexibility within your budget. You can move the dollars around. You can orchestrate or do whatever you need with respect to your Section 100s to move dollars around and attend to that factors. It's total spending more than what the governor recommended, but it addresses the $33 million shortfall in Medicaid. Now, as the senator from Buffalo described, we may have a huge impact on this for stimulus, because in all indications there will be some Medicaid dollars coming down. So we reserve the $25 million into the $200 million. So their Series 1 is $200 million. So you can see that out of $200 million of salaries, they have a lot of flexibility. There are a lot of vacancies, a lot of things that they can do. So what we still tied up the $25 million into the auditor's account. It cannot be spent till after we come back. We put some language in there to make sure that it would pass muster with the federal oversight agency. With that, Mr. Chairman, the only other thing that's left is on page 12 or 22, footnote 12. We did give the Public Health Laboratory the authorization to charge fees for testing services provided to state, to other state agencies, law enforcement entities, and other folks. They need to create a fee schedule. That's a new authority. And with that explanation, I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Section 48? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the stimulus package, there's potential of about a 4 percentage point change in our FMAP, which is about $20 million, is it not? And the other large item would be a provision for Medicaid for people who are on unemployment insurance, and that's going to be 100% federally funded, and I guess we'll administer it, which, frankly, I think has potential financial disaster for the federal government, because I think they're going to collect a lot of people who need medical work. And I think they're going to see adverse selection on quite a scale. But I don't think that's going to impact our general fund one way or the other. Am I in the right league as to what we might expect in the Medicaid?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that is consistent with what we're learning and what we're hearing, and we expect there will be, again, huge or substantial differences between the House and the Senate language, that there will be time taken, and our assessment is that the likelihood is that maybe we'll see the results before we leave, but the likelihood is that it will take longer time to work out those differences, particularly with the Department of Health, but that is consistent with what our understanding is.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, so we're dealing with a fair amount of uncertainty as to what the feds are really going to do, and it would be wise for us to take precautions in case they don't do near as much as we think they might. And then I don't know if this is the appropriate time or later is the appropriate time with the way you've dealt with the auditor's reserve there. Let me express a concern that Medicaid is a different animal than anything else we have in the budget. The Department for Services, which are authorized and within the eligibilities, which they can change, we don't restrain that. They shouldn't change them without coming to us, but they can. They can spend it, and if it goes over the budget, too bad, we've got to come back and appropriate it. It's an open-ended entitlement. And so I'm a little nervous as we let the health department do some other things with money that might otherwise be reserved for that contingency that the spending might get out of hand. We're starting to dig ourselves a hole for next year, and I'd appreciate a little comment on that.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're all concerned about that, and we're trying to attend to that in a variety of different ways. First of all, with respect to the Department of Health, they're spending at a rate now that they need to have that $20.5 million, because what ends up happening is that as they begin to pull down their federal match and spend, the federal component says, do you have enough state dollars to stretch you out to the end? We're not going to just allow you to fund it for 6 months, burn through all of our money, and then you have a program that doesn't apply, so that when they do their analysis, which I admit that I don't fully understand, but whatever the analysis they do want to know what monies and what is the state appropriated for you for these programs. And so we have had to modify the auditor's dollars. And when you see the Section 300, the old Section 300 said that it could only be utilized after legislative appropriation. And we've changed that in that to at least make the dollars available for their bases to apply as they move through the process. We've left the $20.5 million in the auditor's reserve for, among other things, is that if things change, money FMAP change goes, maybe the governor won't have to take those monies out, and so we've created a buffer there. At the same time, we've said they're available to you, but at this point, with the new changes, the only requirement will be as they go through the B-11 process, which we all know requires the governor's signature. With respect to the concern about what are they doing in the interim, among other things, in the language that we're bringing forward to you tomorrow with respect to economic stimulus dollars that are spent, they're going to be captured. They need to be identified. They need to go through the governor's office to make sure that we know what we're spending, what programs they're going into. And finally, we provide in that none of the dollars can be utilized to increase your standard budget, so that when they come back, any dollars or any program that's been increased must come through the exception program. And that's about all the control I know that we have to latch on to it. And if there are other areas where we have concern and you have some ideas with respect to how we constrain the growth in programs through an economic stimulus, what we want to do is stimulate the economy. What we're not looking to is expand our general fund budget. This budget is a strong budget, and so we are attentive to those things. We're thinking about it, and you'll see amendments come through to address those issues. I hope that addresses your concerns or your questions.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under item 4, there's TT, which, of course, is a tobacco settlement account, and there's some funding there for some different cancer programs. Two questions. Where does that show up? Because I don't see 4 here, and I might be in a Section 300, but I don't think so. Where does it show up in the budget? And the second question is, when we talked about those regional centers that are out there that I think some money was appropriated in the last budget, was there any discussion about those or the fact that we may be asking some of that money to revert?
Senator Nicholas.
When you said item 4, I'm assuming you're referencing the 4, which is referring to the footnote. And the footnote refers to footnote, which you see on page 20. That was footnote 4 is for. Remember that everything that's the footnotes are brought through from the original budget. So this is last year's budget. The only thing that we've added on is a new budget of things that are underlined. Having said that, I'm still not sure. Oh, I know what you're talking about. So you're looking at item four under the governor's rec, which was the $40,000 for breast and cervical cancer screening. In effect, all of those things are wiped out. And what we've allowed them to do with their flex dollars is to, if they can and if they think it's the highest priority, they could fund this. Having said that, if they have Medicaid deficiencies that have to be dealt with first, there may be no funds to address these governor's recs. We're going to give them some authority to attend to the governor's recs, but only if they have the money and only if they can address it with their total package. So let me step back again. We stripped out everything that the governor's rec. We have no specific authorizations or statements with respect to what they can do with their money. We expect them to prioritize, and we expect them to address their statutory, their obligations first. Whether there will be enough money for that program, who knows? But if there is, and they can manage it, then because it was in the governor's rec, they could spend it there.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I understand, but I want to be sure that that's what you did, because number four, in where you stripped out the money, does not appear on our cheat sheet, page 9. And is there some other place where you stripped it, or is it included? I would have thought that the number four would have been included. You know, we got everything except number four.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, the way that if we had, ultimately you have to go to the numbers above. And what ends up happening is you see the governor's recs in this column, and you see the deletions, and then we actually delete it so that when it carries through, there's no new money added to those programs. The way you would have added the money is you add, say, $40,000, and you footnote it, and you say, of that funding, $40,000 is applied to this program. And since we did not add the money, there's nothing to footnote, so there are no footnotes, no more additional dollars added. Does that help you?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understand the question, the what is in the budget is $235,000 in tobacco funds for the telehealth program, $40,000 in tobacco funds for screening services, $700,000 in tobacco funds for some additional screening services, and $200,000 in tobacco funds for the worksite wellness project. And so that's taken out of tobacco funds, and I don't think that's included in the Section 300 mini block grant, for the lack of a better term. Instead, those are, I think, line item funded through the tobacco fund. And with regard to, I think that there was a reference to the County Cancer Resource Coordination Project, in which there was 1 year funding for that provided last year, and the governor originally requested a second year of funding for that program with his December 1st submission, I think for $495,000. However, that was later withdrawn when he came back in with his revised budget in January, and he took that off the table, and the Appropriations Committee did not put it back on, if indeed that's the program, if I heard you right, that you may have been referring to.
Senator Bebout.
Did I get it wrong?
So, Mr. Chairman, then it is in, is what you're saying, because it comes out of the tobacco settlement. So those amounts of money, $40,000 for breast, $700,000 for colorectal cancer, $200,000, since they're from the tobacco settlement account, they are included or they're not included?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, and I apologize. I know what I did now. I skipped over those. The answer is, and I apologize again, lines 3 and 4 are tobacco funds. They're funded. And here's how you know. Look above at the spreadsheets above, and you can see that under state health officers, there's $235,000 tobacco funds under the other funds and $940,000 in the other funds. And if you look at the governor's or the JAC recs, there's no modification to those two lines. You look into the supplemental budgets, you can see the line drawn through those two accounts where the tobacco funds are adjusted. So, and I apologize, I said that wrong. Those two programs are funded with tobacco dollars. They're in the budget. Once again, I apologize for that.
Any further discussion on Section 48? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 48, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 48 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 49. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, I move Section 49, Department of Family Services, at page 23 of your budget bill and page 10 of your cheat sheet for an explanation. I'll turn it over to Senator Massey.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Department of Family Services is a $284 million biennial budget with 813 employees. There are essentially three requests, all dealing with the IRIS, the IRIS computer system. And there's an appropriation of $1,172,393 in general fund money and $975,000 in federal funds for the maintenance of the existing computer system that determines eligibility for food stamps, Medicaid, and child care. And we're continuing to upkeep the existing computer system while the new one that's being installed gets fine-tuned and hopefully up and running fairly soon.
Any further discussion on Section 49? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 49, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 49 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 51. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. I move Section 51, Livestock Board, at page 10 of your cheat sheet and page 22 of your bill. And for an explanation, I turn it over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the governor recommended $208,000 in general funds for funding replacement of emergency fiscal year 09 emergency regulatory testing for brucellosis. You'll see that on page 21 of the budget book. Also put in $20,000 for printing brand books. Another $3,500 and $6,500 for contract vendors. That is basically the G-form writers that go out and write the G-forms in the country. The JAC added back $100,000 and included some footnote language, and that footnote language basically says no funds can be expended until and unless detailed rules are adopted by the board, carefully delineating the eligible activities and limiting expenditures to only projects or portions or projects that specifically benefit the state's interest in brucellosis risk management as contrasted with benefiting a private party. So that is the footnote that went on that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that you vote aye and stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Section 51? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 51, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 51 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 57. Senator Nicholas. Oops. Senator Meyer. Oh, Senator Nicholas.
57. Thank you. Actually, I was off the floor. The budget staff has assigned, by the way, folks, a crew of people to among state governments to really look at the FMATCH issues. And it was just reported to me that the ANI thinks that FMATCH change is going to be closer to $80 to $100 million potentially. And they, that's people that are watching it, they're attentive to it, they understand it. And I've heard that $20 million range, and I've seen this, but there are some remarkable things that may happen out there, so we just have to be attentive and be open-minded about what actually comes. Now, I think the answer is we just don't know, and and part of what we need to do is just keep on top of it, keep attentive, and keep watching it. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 57, Community College Commission, at page 25 of your budget. And it's over on page 11 of your cheat sheet for an explanation. Turn it over to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 57, Community College Commission. This is basically the governor's rec. Your first line there on your cheat sheet was $130,000 out of general fund for the development of the strategic plan for our community colleges. As you remember, $120,000 was allocated last session, along with the governor's rec of 130, We're still experiencing a shortfall of the original contract or the estimation of developing that strategic plan, which was $352,000. So we're still short $102,000, provided the testimony that we received. And so we added to the governor's rec $102,000 to finish funding that college strategic or that college commission developing that strategic plan for our community colleges. There was also added from governor's rec $1.6 million coming from the co-lease bonus monies. This is put towards emergency repair and preventative maintenance for our colleges. And then the last thing was the $400,000 out of general funds for increased veterans tuition waiver benefit program demand. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Questions on Section 57? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 57, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 57 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 60. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 60 to the Budget Office of State Land and Investments at page 27 of your bill, page 12 of your cheat sheet, and for an explanation, turn it over to Senator Townsend.
Senator Townsend.
I gave you the wrong cheat sheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Governor's Rex recommended $2,748,384 for operations in the Office of State Lands and Investments for computers and a whole myriad products. This is a balance of an unfunded project cost of a about a $7 million product to upgrade the accounting and software and hardware of the lands and investments to do their business. The next one was a $1 million from the fire protection revolving account to the forestry for for woodland fire equipment purchase, supplies, and overtime. And the governor recommendation for a $3.5 million matching amount to the town of Wamsutter for infrastructure, 4.7 for emergency requests to be managed by the SLIB board was moved to section 338 by the JAC. Any questions?
Any further discussion? Senator Vasey?
Mr. Chairman, just a question, and I in the past couple of years, we've passed out of this house the ability to, for the State Lands Board to take a, or the State Lands Administration to take a certain percentage of their budget to do the administration. It leaves this house, and as soon as it clears that door, it goes off into another land. But has appropriations looked at which would be the better way to do it, to keep appropriating the money, or whether they ought to take, like any responsible corporation that manages that much money, some money of their own to do the administration? And if not, that's fine, but at some time I wonder if the Appropriations Committee could take a look at a better way to do that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the $2.7 million additional on the administration line item, that's a fairly significant amount in a supplemental budget like this. Two questions. Number one, is that an ongoing expenditure, or is that a one-time deal? And second, what are the consequences if we don't fund it?
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that the $2.7 is the last amount of unfunded funds in their project for this accounting procedure and software. So it's just the tail end of the big project, the big wahoo.
Any further discussion on Section 60? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 60, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 60 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 66. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move Section 66, Wyoming Tourism Board. You'll find it page 28 of your bill. With respect to the Tourism Board, we... The Tourism Board had proposed a couple of fairly aggressive initiatives to help extend tourism. One was what they called the emerging markets to really try to recruit into China, India, and Taiwan, which is something that the states that we're surrounding have done. And they also recommended one-time funding for what they call a proactive economic marketing strategy, which includes a direct mail component, geographically targeted online effort, additional TV spots, quarterly research, winter allocation recapture, total $195,000. The idea is to target research for these dollars to bring people into Wyoming this year, particularly during this economic downturn. The governor originally recommended both projects. When we came back, there was not enough money. The governor cut out, and we agreed to cut out to the emerging market dollars, leaving the agencies with the $955,000 appropriation for this targeted effort to try to get more people to come to Wyoming during this economic downturn. No questions? I'd call for the question.
Any further discussion on Section 66? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 66, say aye. Opposed, no. Section 66 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 67. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 67 of the budget, University of Wyoming, page 28 of your bill, page 12 of your cheat sheet for an explanation. Turn it over to Senator Massey.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the University of Wyoming, most of the funding has been moved into the Section 300. The only thing remaining in this area is $100,000 to the College of Agriculture to bring together some leading scientists in brucellosis research so that they can put together a plan over the next year with regard to research strategies and vaccine protocols to submit an approach to deal with brucellosis outbreaks in the northwest part of the state.
Any further discussion on Section 67? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the brucellosis testing and vaccine, was there any discussion of the potential obstacles to this or what the timeline would be? You know, you can't even get the vaccine. There's a reason no company makes it because it's not profitable. Are we just throwing good money after bad? Because I suspect $100,000, that's probably the smallest check we're going to cut in this whole program. When you start developing a vaccine, particularly for a very limited population in a very limited part of the world, is there any real feasibility, or could the College of Agriculture give you what the odds are that they'll ever be successful in the lifetime of the elk herds in the western part of the state?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if he was referring to the elk's lifetime or our lifetime, but with regard to whichever's longer, I might be the elk. With regard to the what is being requested here, $100,000 is not going to get to the question that the good senator from Johnson County raised. It's meant to bring together some of the leading experts in order for them to begin to address those very good questions as well as others. At this particular point, I don't believe the College of Agriculture or anyone would say, yes, there's going to be a vaccine that we can use at the end of this process. I think the first point is to, the first step is to bring this research team together, let them begin to talk with each other, discuss what the research strategies are, discuss what the key questions are, and really what the likelihood is of winding up with some kind of vaccine or other protocol to begin dealing with the brucellosis outbreak. The point was made that if we wait for the private sector to do this, we may be waiting quite a bit longer, given the fact that it's isolated into a certain part of Wyoming and is not necessarily a statewide threat at this particular point, may not necessarily mobilize a great deal of private money to start this. So the recommendation of the governor and the Appropriations Committee alone went along with it was $100,000 in general fund money to take this first step of calling these experts together and having them and asking them to develop a plan for us to take a look at. And, of course, then we can decide whether or not we like the plan and want to start heading down that road.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe I'm misreading this appropriation, but it goes into their block grant and it's general fund money. And unless somebody can intercept it, it's $200,000 in the next biennium, and it rolls in automatically. And maybe if they wait long enough, you know, we can put a dome or something and bring the elk over and just winter them and vaccinate them in the stadium after the football team's done. I don't know, but I think that's a possibility. But the way this amendment is written, there is nothing that says come back and look at it. And do you really want to put $100,000 this year? It'll be $200,000 next biennium, $400,000 the following biennium. And pretty quick, you're talking real dollars. Is there something we can do that says, stop, let's see where we're at? Is it really worth going in deeper, as I understand that we want to do that?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly, in a second or third reading amendment, to put on a reporting requirement and to direct it to a particular committee, it certainly would seem justified in order to get that information. But I'm sure UW, the university, would be forthcoming with that report regardless. And also to note, back in the budget itself, the governor has indicated that this particular funding would not be part of UW's block grant and would need to be tracked separately.
Any further discussion on Section 67? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 67, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 67 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 72. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, and I want to go back before we finish that topic. If the governor's rec says that an item is added to the budget and it's not to return as a or be expanding either your standard budget or, in this case, the block grant, that is the governor's rec that we adopt. And even though you may not see it footnoted as such in the budget, when the budget analysts go to recreate what is the university's block grant in the next biennium, they review the footnote, and the footnote binds and adheres. So to the extent that if I don't have that page open, but if Senator Massey is correct that the governor's rec says the $100,000 goes in and it's only for this purpose and it's not to increase the block grant, even though it looks like under the budget bill it increases the total appropriations for state aid, that does not increase the block grant. The governor's rec in that regard is adopted and becomes part of our recommendations, even though you may not see it in the actual budget bill. And there are lots of events like that that take place where we have specifications, the budget analysts know, and then they build the standard budget in a fairly complicated process. With that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I move section 72, the retirement system, and the only items, folks, that we've added to here, well, actually what we've done is we've added additional funding or positions and funding that are funds that are generated from the internal funds from the system itself, and it's to respond to the Wyoming State Auditor's Office Operational System Review. They recommended that the retirement system beef up its staffing. We agreed with that, so five positions are added. Once again, it's paid for by the retirement system. There is a $49,000 appropriation to fund the volunteer EMT personal pension plan that we created last year. The plan is not up and running yet, so it needs some general funds to get started. If there are no questions, I would stand for. Are there questions? If not, call for the questions.
Any further discussion on Section 72? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 72, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 72 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 80. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 80, Department of Corrections, found at page 30 of your bill, page 13 of your cheat sheet. Turn it over to Senator Meyer for explanation.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure how you want to go about this. There's 21 separate recommendations here by the governor for Department of Corrections. I think they can mostly be characterized as startup costs for Torrington. That's where the biggest sections of them are. I will go into the area where JAC made a change different from what the governor's rec was, and we added $1,303,980, and this is for second-year funding of beds at the Casper Reentry Center. Those needed to be funded for a second year. I guess it would be I think what I'll do is just go ahead and ask for any questions so we don't have to go through the whole thing if anybody has a question on any specific one.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was watching the news last night in California. Judges are telling the state that they have to cut loose a bunch of prisoners. And my question is not so much specifically, but in the overall corrections area, when this prison gets up and running, how many of our prisoners will we be able to bring back that we're now in other states? And will we still have to have funding for prisoners to be housed out of state because everything we now have will be full?
Senator Meyer.
Okay, we can get you specific numbers, but basically we're going to be pretty much at capacity when they all come back in. We will have some intensive treatment beds that are going to be at these other facilities, and so that's going to alleviate some of the need to do some of the private beds that we have in the state.
Any further discussion on Section 80? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 80, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 80 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 85. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In adding to what was just said, my recollection is a little bit different. When the minimum security prison is up and running, we'll bring everybody comes back. There will be enough capacity, I want to say, out to about 5 to 6 years. While we were building the minimum security prison, the contractor that was there to lay precasted forms, and so we went ahead, and this is one of the areas where we'll be talking about construction management contingency funds. A former colleague of ours from Carpenter is running the division. He had a contingency fund that he maintains of, say, $5 to $6 million. The contractor had all of their slip forms. They were ready to rock and roll. They came back and said, we will put them up for what we thought was a heck of a bargain. So the construction manager did the go-ahead. We've actually precasted another wing on that to build out. So that my belief now, and I don't know the exact numbers, we'll pull them out of the notes later, but my recollection is all we have to do now is finish that wing to take us out another 10 or more years. Having said that, I mean, we continue to send bills out here that will quickly fill any capacity, but right now we're in pretty good shape, and we have you're going to see a little bit later we're trying to restore some of that contingency funds. With that in mind, that takes us to agency 85. I move section 85. Wyoming Business Council, it's on page 31 of your bill, page 14 of the cheat sheets. For an explanation, turn it over to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, here's a department that didn't get anything they asked for, and they're just still as happy as a bunch of clams down there. JAC adopted the governor's recommendation for a footnote to this budget allowing the agency to transfer business-ready community monies to the community facility program. And that's the only thing we did with this supplemental budget was add that footnote. And that amount is up to $4 million from the business-ready communities program to the community facilities grant loan program. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Section 85? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 85, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 85 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 101. Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I move Section 101, Supreme Court, found at page 32 of your bill. For an explanation, turn it over to Senator Massey.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The appropriation that folks see in front of them is for $4,366,218, which is about roughly half of what the Supreme Court asked with regard to a modernized electronic system for the district court system, as well as for attorney registration. A few years ago, we provided money to the Supreme Court to modernize an electronic and to allow its processes and its case management at the Supreme Court to become updated, modernized, and computerized. And it has been quite successful and has increased the efficiency in the operation of the Supreme Court. The request coming back now is to do something similar with the district courts, designed to provide electronic filing, public access, document management, data for reports, and accounting functions for the entire district court system. And it is very similar, or will be very similar, to the management system adopted and developed by the Supreme Court. And in fact, they're using the same contractor, or proposed to use the same contractor, to do this. In conjunction with that, there'll be an attorney registration and management system. And it would implement the Supreme Court's case management system with regard to the Wyoming State Bar. As you know, one of the Supreme Court's administrative responsibilities is to oversee the Wyoming State Bar. And in the process of doing that, there's a great deal of duplication between the two groups, between the Wyoming State Bar and the Supreme Court. And by integrating and updating the information and to computerize the way that the Wyoming State Bar does some things, will eliminate duplication and follow through on the court statutory requirements. And this is a good time to do it because it could be integrated into the updated case management system for the district courts. And specifically with regard to attorney registration, it would allow all attorney records to be created in the office of the clerk of court rather than having both entities trying to generate those records and therefore eliminate some duplication. Of the amount that's being appropriated, there will be one new employee and an ongoing cost of $441,000. Be glad to try to answer questions.
Any further discussion on Section 101? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I guess a couple questions. In terms of the court automation, Mr. Chairman will recall many, many years ago, we tacked on a $10 per case filing case fee, and the court lost that. It just disappeared. When we reorganized the court system in the mid-90s, late 90s, we added an additional $10 fee for court automation. It's all it was supposed to be used for. And I'm wondering just how much of this $5,681,000 is coming from not the first 10 bucks. I realize we lost that a long time ago. But the second $10 we put on, that those good, honest Black Road folks told us they'd always watch it carefully and make sure it went to court automation, how much are they contributing out of their $10 per filing fee for court automation?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, the court automation account for the biennium will generate $5.8 million as the balance. And actually, I didn't say that correctly. It's generated from 2001 to present about $5.8 million. And it actually provides a payroll of seven people. It has an offsite data center, sound application for the circuit court. So they're providing a variety of electronic equipment for the courts, the district courts around the state. So these actually dollars are going into the court systems. They're going into the networks on the district courts. So when you walk in and your your judge can get on a computer and he actually can reach somebody on the other side. That is your court automation fee. And we've got an accounting, because we asked for it, of $5.8 million, and I can provide the accounting to the Senator or Chairman. With respect to these dollars, this is a new request, and it's going into the clerks of district court. And it's one of those hybrid areas where the clerks of district court provide a significant function for the district courts. They have no ability to raise revenues. They don't use the, but they have a service that's important to us, and that's where you file all your litigation. We are in the last century with respect to e-filing. It's hard to get records over the internet from the court system. Now that we've learned how to e-file at the Supreme Court, it's time to move that into the district courts. And so this actually goes into the clerks. For the first time, we seem to have a cooperation between the clerks and the district courts, and that's really a testament to these 7 full-time employees that were employed out of that court technology fund. And they've really advanced the IT functions at the Supreme Court. For those of you that went over, you saw their IT facilities. They really have moved into this century, and those 7 folks have won over the clerks, and clerks are now prepared to let the Supreme Court take over the case management, create an electronic filing system. So it is expensive. It does go into the clerk's dollars, and I think that everybody will find that it's a real positive thing for the state to move forward with e-filing the district courts.
Any further discussion on Section 101? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I think it is an admirable thing that Mr. Chairman will recall that in 2001, when we reformed the courts, we held out of the district court authority automation. And we took that back from them. They had it before then. We said, no, it's going to be an integrated system. And what I'm hearing is it's taken 7 years and $5 million to start this automation in the district courts that we mandated when we reformed the court system. That makes me nervous. What if I die or get sent to prison because my case didn't get heard before these folks get around to it? Is there any way we can take back those filing fees and put them back where they belong? They were not intended to have staff run around and service the Supreme Court's computers, which service actually only 2 levels of court, the Supreme Court and the Circuit Court, and that they've been ignoring probably their most, where they get the most appeals, well, maybe workman's comp, but I don't know, that we're kind of misguided here.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, the court needs a defender, and I hate to always be the defender, but with respect to the chairman's question, of course, there's always a way we can retrieve money, and if we want to go back, if they're collecting dollars now that are not being accounted through this account, we can make sure they get accounted, at least from this point forward. It's kind of hard to get them to cough out money. When I look at the funds that are being utilized out of the present IT dollars that have spent over the course of time, I agree that a lot of that is going to the circuit courts, but there's a substantial number that is going to district courts, and the data center that I think the offsite data center is the. I'm not going to say now. I want to look into that. We'll look into it.
Any further discussion on Section 101? Senator Sessions.
I wonder what that off.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question on the court automated system. Was there any discussion about the inclusion of all of the juvenile records within the juvenile court in the district court, of making sure that that was incorporated into their system so that we have a record?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the properly developed case management system will do those things. I hope they will.
Further discussion on Section 101? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 101, say aye. Opposed, no. Section 101 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise for the purpose of a 10-minute break and sit again.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We'll be on break for 10 minutes. And I mean 10 minutes. Sorry. The committee of the whole will come back to order. Next section for our consideration is section 125. Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I move section 125, the following judicial district budget, which is Judicial District 3A. Once again, turn it over to Senator Massey for explanation.
Senator Massey.
What? Which one are we doing here?
Or not?
I didn't know I was doing that.
Senator Nicholas.
Townsend's? Turn it over to Senator.
Senator Townsend, to the rescue.
Mr. Chairman, Section 125, Judicial District 3A, the governor recommended $32,000 for telephone communication costs and in-state travel association. The JAC did not bother that recommendation, but we did... reduce the court's recommendation for capital case costs by $12,000 based on new evidence of expenditure. So we reduced that budget by $12,000. On Section 135, Judicial District 6B, they recommended $8,000 general fund for court reporter services. We didn't bother that either. And that's all there is to those. If there are any questions, that's not, we move the bill.
Senator Nicholas.
I'll just move both of those sections. So I'll move both section 125 and 135. That includes Judicial District 3A and Judicial District 6B. The only change that I would say is that it's actually not the governor's rec for the district courts. District courts are independent constitutional entities, so they have a budget review committee, and that comes from the district. The recs come from the district court budget review committee. The Supreme Court is a Supreme Court rec. With that, if there's no questions, I'd call for the question.
All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt sections 125 and 135, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Sections 125 and 135 have been adopted. The next section for our consideration is section 205. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move section 205, Education School Finance, at page 14. Now let's try 34 of your budget. Page 15 of your cheat sheet. And for an explanation, turn it over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is our school foundation, school finance section. There is a 3.7% external cost adjustment added to this. That amounts to $30,281,989. LSO staff, I think, is going to have us present amendment tomorrow because that was already in the $1,306,000. So we're going to double-check that. We may come back because that may have appeared twice in the budget, and we'll double check that and bring it back on second reading for you. There is an adjustment here of $45,786,99. Primarily, that is a recalculation and a revision of the enrollment. And as the students go down, the need for the school foundation funding goes down with it, and we're continuing to drop students. JAC also added $804,000 to address the funding shortfalls in the National Teacher Certification Allowance. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the external cost adjustment. And I know that things have changed maybe since you came up with that percentage relative to the national economy, the recession. We're in a deflationary cycle. Is there anything in the law that allows you to look at those kind of factors when we're going the other way as well as when we're going up, or is this something that pretty much by the Supreme Court decision, we're bound to have these kind of percentages?
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing that precludes us from taking a different tact as far as the percentage. There has been some attempts to increase that with fuel costs and different things. There may be some attempts to decrease that. However, JAC felt that it was appropriate to be consistent and use the same experts and the same parameters in which they use. They've got a multitude of different things that they look at besides just energy costs. And so we wanted to be consistent and make sure there wasn't any problems with the courts now or in the future. And so that basically if we keep riding the same horse, we don't have to worry about somebody trying to make this 4 or 5% next year if gas prices go up to $10. You know, we just basically just stay the course.
Any further discussion on Section 205? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 205, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 205 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 220. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 220, Environmental Quality Council, for an explanation. Turn it over to Senator Peterson. That's at page 35 of your bill and page 16 of your cheat sheets.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 220, Environmental Quality Council, with three employees and a budget of $742,748, basically requested and the governor recommended $4,000 from general funds for council members' travel expenses, and out of that $4,000, $2,000 goes to travel expenses, and the other two go to professional fees, and that was all that was added to that budget from the supplemental budget. So I would stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you go into what the professional fees are a little more?
Senator Peterson?
Let me see here. Contractual services is what they list here, and I'm looking. You got it, Senator Massey?
Senator Massey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's for a third-party vendor for scanning documents into a searchable database.
Any further discussion on Section 220? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 220, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 220 has been adopted. I believe that brings us to the end of...
Mr. Chairman, the last one that's actually the budget is the Section 233 Board of Pathology that's already been gone over by the very well-prepared practice, Senator Johnson. So I'll just follow the question. Sorry.
Or Section 33, Board of Cosmetology.
Sorry. Any,
I move it and call for the question.
Mr. Senator Nicholas, you move Section 33?
Yeah, what's happened, you're working off the cheat sheet, but if you go to the budget bill at page 35, this is where the Section 33 Board of Cosmetology is. So we've already reviewed it with the cheat sheet, so they were not arranged together. So I just... Move Section 33, Board of Cosmetology, at this time and call for the question.
All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 33, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 33 has been adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move for the adoption and closure of Section 2 to the budget.
Any further discussion on Section 2? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 2 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
We are now at page 36 of your budget. We're at page 1. Actually, it's what's called the Section 3, Capital Construction. It is identified as page 1 on your cheat sheet. This is the capital construction portion of our budget. I move Section 3 to the budget. And then dropping down below that, I move Section 6, which is the A&I budget. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll just go quickly through and start talking, showing folks what it is. ANI Flex Contingency Fund, we've actually talked a little bit about that. That is the contingency fund that we provide to the construction management division. So what we've done with those folks is said, look, you oversee these contracts, and instead of just putting flex or dollars on the contracts above and beyond the or a contingency, we have a general contingency fund. We would like to have had, if we had the opportunity, to restore the entire flex contingency fund and as well as the construction management contingency funds. We were unable to get it, restore it fully after, as I explained, we spent a large amount of money at the prison, but we were able to supply $1.7 million and advise that the construction manager can live with that. ANI Lab Construction Account, we are authorizing the $78,600,000. Those are the dollars, and that is for the joint lab project. Those are the biosafety level three labs. One is over to be constructed over in Laramie behind or as part of the vet lab. The second is to be built here in Cheyenne. It'll tentatively intended to be a location that's over near LCCC. They're both biosafety three level hazards. The existing ANI or the existing lab in Laramie is on the third floor of the Hathaway building. It will house the labs for a variety of folks, including Department of Health and DCI. Below that, you see the ANI new state office building, item number footnote four, the $4.4 million. Senator from Casper asked where those funds are. That is the level three final design dollars for that facility. I'll take you to the footnote in a moment. We'll just work through this list. Lines 17 and 18 on that page, I'm working off of the budget, is $200,000. To take a look at the Herschler building. For those of you not aware, the Herschler building was constructed in a manner to be expanded to the north. There are footings on the north side of it to be expanded. There has been discussion about what do we do and where does the legislature go in the event that we ever find the funds to restore the Capitol building to put in install things such as a sprinkler system and upgrade some of the water pipes throughout the building. If and when we have that money, the idea is let's take a look and design a plan to, and this would just be the first level of planning to look to see, can we add space to the Herschler building on the north end? When you do that, you actually build above what is that atrium area, and you get two levels, and then there'll still be an atrium above. There is and we think we can do that and create two large areas that could be adequate for temporary location for the legislature. In addition, if we do that, then down the line it could turn into additional office space. Down on lines 27 through 28, we did agree to give the additional major maintenance to the state parks, $1.8 million, to continue a couple of projects. One is to restore the Piedmont kilns. No, I'm actually on a different topic. It'll come to me in here in a minute. I'll come back to that. That's generally just for the, you recall with the state parks, they originally fell outside of our major maintenance formulas for the state facilities, and they were looking for funds, and this helps them get along their projects. Game and Fish, line 32, we approved the $4.5 million for the tent-sleep hatchery, and $5.7 million is approved for the Department of Health Pioneer Home. And those are all general funds. When you look over the next page, Department of Health, the State Hospital, we've agreed to allow them to get into the state funds for $4 million for the HVAC to get that facility air-conditioned. And those come out of the funds that are available for the state lands and it'll come to me. I apologize. The Omnibus Lands Fund. And there's an income fund, and then there's an actual second fund that requires legislative approval. And in this case, they come out of the Omnibus Permanent Fund, which is not really a permanent fund. Then the Department of Family Services, Wyoming, the Girls School, we've appropriated $4.5 million of general fund and $4.5 million from the Omnibus Land Fund for a total of $9 million for the additional work of the Girls School. The Tourism Center, this is on the I-25 coming up. That's the additional planning money for the Level 3 final dollars for that, $2.1 million. So that gives you a general fund expenditure of $1.53 million total. The new dollars are the difference between the old $60 million and the $153, which is about $90 million. There's $13 million coming from other funds. If you look at page 37, at the bottom on line 24, you see the instructions with respect to the Level 3 design for the state office building. There have been all kinds of discussions about what should be done. Should it be a temporary housing for the legislature? Who should go into it? And I guess we're far more pragmatic about it. And the view is simply this. The justification for building a new state office building is primarily and principally to return state agencies that are located in lease facilities back to a state-owned property. When you look at that and you do that analysis, there is about $5.5-6 million of lease payments that we're paying every year to landlords, and those monies are going up. We requested A&I to present us an analysis of if we went out and found a way to borrow the money. And if you wanted to do that, the template for those of us who have been around a while would be the leased revenue bonds that we did for the prison. If you followed that, would the lease payments defray and pay off the cost of issuance of the bonds? And the answer is yes, they would. So if you came back next year, we would have as an option, if we chose to issue lease revenue bonds, and the lease payments that we're paying to landlords would, in fact, retire those bonds. Should we do that? I don't know. Let's wait till we come back next year. We have the $37 million set aside for the Capitol complex, either for the Capitol building renovation. We could apply it to the state office building. Whether or not we think it's a prudent thing to go forward, we can actually design or go forward. But I think we know what agencies are out there. We know what their lease payments are, and here are the things that we've asked them to look at. Now, with these requirements, what we're probably looking at is a building in the $80 to $90 million range. If there are two sketches out there, this is the larger of the two for those of you who followed it. There is a parking structure portion to it, and there is an office building. But we want to maximize the building space within the site boundaries. That is, within the site over the St. Mary's lot. This goes in the St. Mary's lot. We maximize the site. We're only going to build on it once. Let's use our site. We want to achieve approximately 190,000 square feet of usable office space. Again, if you've been participant and you've seen the different proposal, this is the larger of the two. Provide off-street parking for occupants and visitors. That's part of that larger plan. Provide a safe, efficient, and flexible working environment for a variety of state agencies. That, in effect, is telling A&I, who's going to be administering, that what we want is a flexible office space that can be utilized to house state agencies. We want it to be able to be a modern space. We want to provide a safe, efficient, to be consistent with the State Building Commission energy efficient policy. That's just what you would expect. Turning to the next page, we would like them to provide an exterior that will be visibly pleasing, prudent, and complementary to the Capitol complex and Capitol building. We have a former member of our Senate who had passion about what it should look like. I'm not sure we'll be able to satisfy her passion. On the other hand, we would like it to look like an attractive building. And I think, for example, the discussions I've had with the governor, if you begin to look at our parking structure, there are components of that structure that are attractive. But when you start looking at the precasted, pre-hung concrete that is in between the sandstone sort of buttresses, I'm not sure that anybody thinks the building should look like that. Having said that, I mean, at some point you have to delegate it to somebody to make the decision. And the question is, do we want to retain it as part of a legislative function or delegate it to A&I with instructions? This delegates it to A&I with instructions, and ultimately the final determination is going to be made by the Capitol Building Commission. So sometime sooner or later you got to let go and push forward. The interior design shall consider cost effectiveness, including initial cost and life cycle cost, space efficiency, and flexibility to accommodate any state agency function. Once again, the notion here is that A&I is going to control it. We're going to bring back these agencies, but we're not looking to create conferences rooms the size of the facility that we're standing in right now. The building shall not provide special enhancements or amenities not typically found in other state office buildings for the purpose of employee recreation and fitnesses. So if people are thinking they're going to have basketball courts in there, it's not going to happen. The State Construction Management Division shall negotiate the design contract and select the construction delivery method most beneficial to the state. And you going back to people that have a passion of wanting a building that looks like the Reagan Building, for example, in Washington, D.C., if you want that type of building, you want to spend that kind of money, and at $220 million, you can build a palace. We're looking for something that's in our budget, thinking more about $80 to $90 million, so that I guess if you want to see a $200 million building that's of that caliber, then that's fine, but you'll want to change this if that's what you have in mind. We want to bring the maximum number of state agencies into the state-owned space. So you recall the debate of what do we do? Are we going to clear people out of the Capitol Building? Are we going to move the executive officers? Most likely, the Capitol Building stays the way it is. It is a high likelihood, a probability, that the State Board of Education will be the move over, or not State Board, but the State Superintendent and his staff will be in the new building. So it's likely that that will be the only elected official that's reassigned to that facility. So what we're looking for is utility. What we're looking for with this amendment is to get the building up, get these state agencies that we're paying leases on. For those that are around, we recall that one of the facilities we negotiated, believing that not only were we getting a competitive lease, but we had an option to purchase the building, the old Monkey Ward's building. Turns out the option wasn't there. You begin looking at these leases, they're great for the landlords, but we ought to have our people back in our space and for the lease payments we can get there. Footnote 5 is the footnote to the $200,000 that I just described to you that outline and provide that the $200,000 is designed to look at the Hurstler Building expansion with anticipation that we may need rooms capable of temporarily housing a legislative session. Mr. Chairman, stand for questions. Oh, come on.
Senator Doc Stater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just learning about all the offices that are spread across this city related to the state. Is it possible to bring all of them back into this proposed, I guess, Capitol Campus complex, or at least in the neighborhood, with this $80 to $90 million building?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, with the 190,000 square foot option and with the construction of the new biosafety 3-level labs, so what's going to happen when the biosafety 3-level labs are opened up, we will then have more space in the Hathaway building. And with this building, the answer is yes. With this option, all agencies will then reside within state-owned facilities.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. if we don't keep adding new state employees. And
Mr. Chairman, my question is on the analysis on that that showed that, that you could pay for this by the savings in the lease fees eventually. Typically, you have, when you own something, you have a bunch of expenses in maintenance and depending on the specific terms of the lease, sometimes power and other costs that you still have when you, you own a new building. So your savings aren't the total lease fees. And my question is, when you got that analysis done by A&I, were those costs properly considered? Because you typically don't save, Mr. Chairman, all your lease fees. You save a portion of them, and a portion of them you find those are just operating expenses for the new building.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I'd like to delve back into my institutional memory over on page 38, lines 11, 12, and 13. Back at the last boom, I had an appropriation to design and build a new state library. We had the architectural plans completely done and ready for bid when the bust happened, and that was the end of a brand new state library. They were going to put it north of the Herschler building on what this calls footings. What that really is a raft slab on the underground river that flows through this area, and it's a very large, large, huge triangle. And I was going to put four floors on at 200 pounds per square foot because of high-density shelving, which is a lot more than 65 pounds per square foot, which is your average office space. So what can be done over there with what can be loaded onto that raft slab is six or seven floors of building for whatever reason possible. If we're going to put two on, why not either design or put more on, and it would be a lot less expensive than going back later and doing it. But I would like the Senate to be aware of this is a possibility. Once that raft lab is slab is built on, the Herschler building will no longer be a V, it'll be a W.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of things to think about. And when I ask this question, I want you all to know I own no buildings with no office space in them. But what I'm asking is, and I've thought about this in the discussion with this, particularly the downturn in the economy. So what we do is we use taxpayers' money to build us a new office building to complete, and I have no problem with that, if it's done correctly, I might add. But then we take that, but then we're taking revenue away, taxpayers' revenue away from our citizens in this community. And so I guess to me there's just a dual question here. We use their taxpayers' money then to take away their ability to fill their office space. And I think we should do it, but I think we do have a real conflict here. I keep thinking about that, especially, you know, if Cheyenne was growing great guns and we didn't have empty buildings and whatever, and we will have more empty buildings, I guess, if we do this. So I just wanted us to be aware of this. But the other thing is, does anyone, and maybe I've been around our previous senator too long and learned too many things that I did not know about architecture, probably way more than I ever wanted to learn. On page 38 of our budget bill and a little 6 VI at the top, the question I have, does the Legislative Facilities Commission have any input into the design of this building, any input into what we would like to see as a legislature to complete or to be part of the Capitol complex? I guess that's the question I'd
Senator Nicholas.
If I could begin answering some of these questions in order they came. With respect to the question of whether or not, when we did the analysis of rent versus loan payments over a 40-year term, whether we considered the operating cost, the answer is that the analysis does not do that. It takes a look at just the base rent, compares it against the loan payments. When you do that, our base rents are presently about $4.6 million. When they did the analysis, they did an analysis based upon loan payments of $4.6 million throughout the entire term of 40 years. So we use the 40 years because that's what's required for cost allocation for federal agencies, and I'll talk about that in a minute, or federally funded agencies. And that total is about $186 million. The current rent amortized over 5% per year, amortized with you have a 5% increment. So anticipating a 5% interest will generate about $204 million of rent obligations at the current level with a 5% annual increase. So that if the rents go up, then there was it'll be substantially greater than that. Now, I believe that we're going to find with many of these facilities that as I was describing the lease for the charter school over on the other side of town, that there's several components, that there's a base rent, and that's what's being compared here. If there are tenant improvements, we either pay them or we have to sort out to do the tenant payments. There will be a CAM charge, a common area maintenance charge on that. So if you would like us to go back and compare what our operating costs would be to our common area maintenance charges, our maintenances, we provide all of the janitors and that sort of thing for state facilities. My guess is you're going to find that our CAM charges that we would have if we brought it in are comparable to what the private sector, and maybe even less than the private sector CAM charges would be. So that, and I understand what the concern is with respect to worrying about whether the landlords in Cheyenne will go broke tomorrow if we don't lease facilities for them. But the flip side of it is that we look at these year in, year out. We look at the lease payments going out. We look at the fact that we got agencies out. Every time you want to call and talk to somebody from the Department of Health, they've got to drive from outside of town. They've got to come in. We have tremendous inefficiencies, it's more efficient to get those folks here, to be here. It's where they work inside of a capital complex. It is over time. It will save us just in the 40 years, approximately $40 million, and beyond that, even greater dollars. With respect to the design, it's a decision that we're delegating really to the Capitol Building Commission. There are five elected officials. They are responsive to people. They're concerned about it, but there's always going to be a compromise unless you're prepared to pay extraordinary dollars for a Taj Mahal. With respect to the good point is made, are we going to house people and how long are these facilities going to be adequate? I would hope that we could strain our growth to this amount, but we have to remember that what does happen and what has happened is that every time you add four or five positions, when we come to JAC, one of the first questions we ask an agency is, can you house those people? Because if they don't, you add four or five positions, they don't have space, they go to the Department of A&I, Administration Information, and say, we need more space. A&I assumes that if the legislature appropriated the positions, then they need the space, and they go out and they go negotiate leases, and all of a sudden, one day, you have a huge number of agencies with space that, when you see your fiscal note, you may or may not be seeing the real cost of those employees, and that is there required additional space? I recommend that when you're asked by an agency to add positions, ask them, do you have the space?
so you know the real cost of those folks. When we build the state office building, we should put a provision that no space is awarded unless it's in a fiscal note and it's specifically approved by the legislature and gone through the budget process. Mr. Chairman, I think that answers all the questions that I had written down.
Any further discussion on Section 6? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was just curious on the $5 million plus being spent for the Pioneer Home in Thermopolis. I've had occasion this last summer to tour through there. There's already been extensive work on remodeling. It's a beautiful job. It's a beautiful facility. I'm just curious, is this the final segment, or how far through the rehabilitation of that entire building are we? Pioneer Home.
Senator Scott?
Chairman, while he's looking that up, I have a further question on that, and that is relates what's the occupancy rate there. Mr. Chairman, that Pioneer Home, it's an assisted living facility. For a while, it was the only one in the state because, frankly, we were well ahead of the assisted living home concept when we got into that in the first place. And now there's a lot of private competition there, and they have had considerable trouble getting any kind of occupancy. And I really wonder about the wisdom of putting a lot more money into that facility as to whether it will be something that we will really use or it'll just be sitting empty in part, as I think it is now. At least it was last time I was there.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I can just tell you from my tour of it that I don't know that any current occupancy rates would be accurate because the remodel has been going on. So there's been whole sections of it that have been cordoned off for reconstruction. So I don't know how accurate that would be. It seemed fairly full to me for those rooms that were available at the time. And I'm not criticizing it at all. The remodel has been going on because it's basically very antiquated aspects of the place that are being upgraded, and it's being upgraded in a nice way. I think when it's done, it's going to be a very attractive facility for people who want to go to. I'm just wondering how far through the process we are.
Senator Geis.
It's about 75% occupied right now with the construction and everything going on there.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, let me just read to you the text. This is a project to provide a repair, replacement, and upgrade of the entire residence structure at the Wyoming Pioneer Home in Thermopolis. This facility has not received a significant upgrade since its original construction. The current room configuration does not address federally required ADA handicap accessibility. The current residence rooms are not air-conditioned. Due to the nature of our facility and our services, many, if not most, of our residents are elderly and multiple health issues. Providing a temperature environment of comfortable ADA-compliant rooms is necessary. The project is submitted as a single capital construction project due to many items needed attention, and it goes on. There's some sewer aspects of it. So my assumption is that this facility is one that has not been previously remodeled, but I know what you're talking about. I think that there are a couple other buildings there, too, aren't there?
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, just one more question. On building this new building, where are we and what would be our position on first using Wyoming companies instead of out-of-state companies? I know the construction business well enough that in the last 6 months or last year, whatever it is, we have some very, very capable construction companies within this state and some very capable architectural firms within this state. And do we leave this entirely up to the Building Commission, or do we make a statement as a legislative body? Maybe we should consider our Wyoming companies that need the work and are very competent to do it.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, we addressed that issue in a bill that went through about a year or two ago where we eliminated the 5% preference for companies for projects above $5 million. This is a project that exceeds that. We did that to partly in response to our own escalating costs to increase the number of contractors. And certainly at that time we were at a, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we had great concern about this, we were in an environment where our state capacity was not meeting our needs. Out-of-state contractors were unwilling to come in and bid because of the 5% preference. If you're a Wyoming company and you're bidding a project in Colorado, you got a 5% reciprocal penalty applied to you because we have the fencing law. We debated and decided and agreed that we amend the statute for projects above $5 million. And as a consequence, we are getting more buildings constructed. And if you're looking around at some of the facilities around the state, including Laramie, you'll see a lot of Colorado firms building, but you'll also see a lot of Wyoming firms. We're, in the end, folks, we still have a huge amount of capital construction going out there between what you see in our budget, what we're adding to the budget, what is in the university budget for capital construction, what's in highways, and what is in the school capital construction account. And over the biennium, you can add up more than $1 billion worth of construction. And while we have an obligation to try to help out our contractors, we have a corresponding obligation to get to spread those dollars and make sure they're working for the taxpayers.
Senator Geis.
And the other thing is a lot of our companies in Wyoming cannot bond for these big jobs. So the out-of-staters have the bonds, but they use a lot of in-state people. And then the other thing, if you're using federal funds, then you have to come under the Davis-Bacon Act.
Senator Sessions?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor this point, but I did see the sign outside here that said the construction being done on the plaza was by a Colorado company, and it also said Wyoming residents do not apply. So the sign was down the next day. But that said this, but I do know that on school facilities, the 25, they're saying our contracts now on building will probably be at least 20% less than they were a couple of years ago. And I'm just in the climate of what is happening to our people within our state, I think maybe it was time to bring this up and to rethink it. It's not the same climate it was when we took the 5% off several years ago.
Any further discussion on Section 6? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 6 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 27. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 27. This is the capital facilities for School Facilities Commission. And I don't think there were any changes to that, were there? Pardon? Oh, thank you. Senator Massey's refresh my recollection, there was a $2 million increase to replace an accounting error that resulted in a $2 million deficit. And other than that, there's no change. If there's no question, then I call for the question.
Any further discussion on Section 27? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section
27.
I'm not on? The lights are all on. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 27, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 27 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 57.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senator Section Nicholas. 57, Community College Commission. The only building that is appropriated or awarded in this is the $10 million for the Casper College Gateway Building Center. That you'll recall the Casper College voted in a mill levy to bond issue to remodel part of the Casper College, and this applies towards a portion of that cost.
Any further discussion on Section 57? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 57, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 57 has been adopted. The next section for our consideration is Section 67. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 67, University of Wyoming Endowment. The new dollars of $3.35 million is added to provide the Level 3, the final design for the Fine Arts, Fine and Performing Arts Facility in Laramie. Any questions?
Any further discussion on Section 67? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 67, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 67 has been adopted.
I move the adoption of Section 3. Call for the question.
All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 3, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 3 has been adopted. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 4, which are the Section 300s. With this, we'll just move it as an entire section, go through it. Mr. Chairman, I'll do it by section and then ask for questions and move on. Section 300, you see the underlying change. Those are the budget balancers. They will change between now and the time that we do the final conference, but that's simply making sure that our budget reserve, our general fund are all balanced. The next item is Section 302, which is the medical contingency appropriations. And we've made changes to this. If you look over on page 43, this is subparagraph E is the language that we allow for the reversions to go into the of the 100 series to go into the auditor's account. And I apologize. This is the funding mechanism that we talked about early. What this does is begin at E on page 43. It says the agency shall have available the 100 series to use, but there are some priorities. The first priorities are beginning at paragraph or line 11 that talks about the $4 million for the following. These are the adult and waivers. We want to make sure that the first dollars, $1.4 million, goes for transitional funding for the children that are on children's waiver, moving to the adult waivers. So we insist that that be paid. Beyond that, it's up to the agency to decide how that $4 million gets to apply to the adult and children waivers. So we say you have to provide $4 million of funding for adult and children's waivers. We only insist from that amount that you apply the $1.4 million to the transitional population. Above and beyond that, then it's your discretion. Down at Romanet 2, beginning on line 22, we do provide and require that of the funds that are available from the sectional or from the 100 series, that the Department of Health does pay $1.3 million for the DD preschool external cost adjustment, $3.4 million for the developmental disability children. This is the added numbers, the population increases. At subparagraph C, we're saying the balance of them is up to you, to the Department of Health, to use your judgment in trying to pay for the variety of other plans that are to be addressed. Over at page 45, at Romanet 3 at the top, this is the language that except for the DD programs and the adult waiver programs, whatever the agency does with the balance of their monies that are derived out of the Section 100 vacancy dollars, those vacancy dollars, they can utilize them, but they have to come back as an exception request as opposed to a standard budget in the next budget. Then beginning at line 9 through 23, we begin to talk about the this is the reversion dollars from the last fiscal year. So up to $4.4 million goes into the auditor's account, and it's hereby, and you look at lines 20, it's hereby appropriated to the state auditor for the beginning period of the effective date of this budget. And then you look down at bottom of page 45, lines 25 through 28, with respect to the auditor dollars, that's section A and F. And if you go back to section A, you'll see that we struck out the language that required further appropriation to access those dollars. From here on, those dollars can be accessed after March 1 of 2010, so we'll be back before then. But after that day, they're available to the agency through the B-11 process. That requires a governor's signature. Questions on the Medicaid 302?
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and what I'm going to is on page 44, lines 25 through 28. And I guess my concern, and we've heard a lot of it about it, we've read a lot about it, is some of the decision-making by various divisions within the Department of Health to spend what appears to be quite a little bit of money buying advertisements and in newspapers and on billboards, probably with the intent to change legislation, namely the billboards. You've seen them. They surround Cheyenne, which is why we don't get near as much wind this session, because they do provide a really good windbreak out there, because they're big, although one fell down. I noticed that coming down Sunday, and I'm sure it's back up by now. But the thing is that in those three lines, we are in essence saying you go choose how you want to spend the money. And I have to admit I'm uncomfortable with that in view of those kinds of things happening at the relatively high level within the Department of Health. Was there any discussion? I think the Constitution says that the legislature will appropriate the money for the uses that we designate. And when we delegate it wide open like that, was there any discussion that we're running the risk of what may be less than forthright to spending of money?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, there is and has been discussion. I think that's part of the role of JAC to make those inquiries. Let me first talk about the advertising campaign. We did bring and asked the director of the Department of Health to address that issue before the committee. And, with respect to the director, I have a lot of confidence in him. I think he is honest and forthright. The tobacco or the anti-smoking campaign that you see is a campaign that my understanding is devised several years ago, and it comes out of tobacco funding. It does have their logo on it because they come out of tobacco funding, and we spend a lot of money in advertising. So the fact that they are engaged in a continuous plan of trying to prevent smoking, and it coincided with our legislative session, you might say is unfortunate on the other hand, it's sort of a fact of life. When I say it's a fact of life, the fact of life is in throughout these budgets, and particularly the Department of Health, there is a large amount of money available for them for advertising and for influencing public policy in the Department of Health. And we did not do it this year, but we do so in the regular budget years. We ask for an accounting of what are they using for advertising, where is it going to go, what is going to be done. So last year in the budget year, we would have asked for their advertising budget. We would have looked at it. We would have analyzed it. We certainly did not go to the next level of saying, tell us about your advertising campaign. We simply know that there's monies available, and we'll continue to do that. And so with respect to then what is the control that we put into this for that issue, if you turn over to page 46, the only control is that these dollars have to be moved through the B-11 process. And the B-11 process requires an application to be assigned by the governor. And to that extent, that is the check and balance. And beyond that, there is none. And the other alternative, of course, is that we say, no, we're not going to do it this way. Let's go back and decide how we're going to allocate funds within the program and force them to adhere to a specific amount of dollars in each program. And the difficulty with that was the late report that they were $33 million in the hole and they had $14 million of governor's recs and hadn't addressed about $8 million worth of adult children waivers and the developmental preschool. So this was the process we went through. We had to give some flexibility. We needed to put a control in it, and the governor is the policeman.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think, though, that there is some control there built into that language, at least some kind of a focus. In taking a look at that, those lines, 25 to 28, on 25 it says other health care financing issues. The terms health care financing refer to a specific program or section of the Department of Health. And if you want to know what's in those that particular section, turn to page 5 of the handout that was given earlier in the day with regard to providing some information about the interim budget. It has the Senate Appropriation Committee's chairman's name up at the top with 210.09 there. And if you turn to page 5, all those entities and programs listed along the left-hand side are what's considered health care financing. So any additional funding beyond, you know, in subsection C that's moved around can't be moved beyond these programs. And then it's further confined, Mr. Chairman, to the wording on page 26, talking about the Department of Health supplemental budget request. So it's confined to these programs, and then only the requests that were made in the governor's 2009-2010 budget request in January. Now, he may have denied the funding to specific entities, and it's still in his budget, so those are eligible to go back and be covered. But also some of the ones that were in his December 1st budget submission for these programs that he later went back and took out, you know, such as the one we talked about earlier, the county cancer program. He could use his discretion with the funding that's available to him to now go back and move some funding into that particular program, too. So it's not wide open. It is confined to a certain group of programs, and then among that group of programs, only to the requests he made in his budget.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those lines, do we know how much that no smoking campaign costs?
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, we do know. I don't have it at my fingertips, and we'll grab it. Maybe somebody's here. If this is right, it says the entire tobacco social marketing program was $900,000 each year. For fiscal year 07-08, the portion that went to smoke-free environmental secondhand smoke education was approximately $400,000 a year. A lot of money.
Any further discussion?
Senator Chairman, that takes us to section 303 that begins at page 46. This is the employee benefits. There's no new money in this. However, the A&I would like to offer an additional insurance option to the state employees that doesn't cost any more net dollars. You'll see that option at page 47, lines 6 through 9, which is an employee who elects family coverage when both husband and wife are employees of the covered entity, creating a split coverage, family coverage. And then there's a provision down below, lines 23 through 25, talking about employee electing employee plus dependent coverage, child coverage. So, and then over on page 48, further description. But in essence, the A&I is just offering more types of opportunity for a greater opportunity for employees. Over at page 49, we're talking about the this is the retiree dollars that we set aside for the health care assistance, and we specify the eligible retirees who retire prior to July 1, 2008. There's the funds available for retirees retiring after that. We have the new system where we're setting aside 1% of their salary and putting it into a system that will compensate a similar amount. Any questions on that section?
Senator Bebout.
I might need some help on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On bottom of page 47, I realize these amounts are up to for like a $1,479.54 for an employee electing family coverage. That's probably 30 or 40% more than what I see in the private sector market. I'm just wondering why that's so high.
Senator Nicholas.
That's what paragraph you're on again, Eli?
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on the budget bill.
Right.
Page 47, subsection D, lines 27, 28, and then over on page 48.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with respect to what happens in the budget bill, we appropriate a specific sum for employee coverage. If it exceeds the appropriation that we have, then the state employee has to pick up the balance. So if you were to go look at let's suppose the appropriation was $20 million for health insurance. We say you can spend up to that amount for each employee. So if there's enough money, then they could spend up to that. If it turns out that all the insurance policy, there's a 20% increase tomorrow, the way our budget works is that increase is absorbed by the employee unless we come back and appropriate more money. So that's the reason why we use the up to language. With respect to your comment that this is more than you would provide in the private sector, it is true that we're providing in this instance, I think what happens on the split is for the 600 is that's where you have two employees that we would actually are both under the same, being paid by the state. And my recollection, so you'd have to do it is say, well, if you split that between, I'm saying this wrong. Let me think about that for a second.
Other questions? You have dead air. Any further discussion on Section 4? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me add just a little information I hope will be helpful on these employee health benefits. We did get a presentation in Committee 10 back at the start of the session that did compare a number of sources of benefits, and the state employees, adults, the average health plan cost. Now, this was the all the health benefits paid out, including the employee's contribution, was $4,463 a year. Now, that doesn't include administrative costs, things like that. Whereas for comparable adults in our largest private insurer, was $3,068. The percent member contribution, which is included in that figure, in the private one was 23.5%. In the government one, the state employees was 15.9%. So we have a state employees plan that is significantly more expensive in terms of what it actually pays out in health costs. Total, including the employee's share, than the private ones. And one of the reasons may be that the percentage of the member contributions is significantly lower. There may be some other factors in there. Our source did have some reservations as to whether he had adequately controlled for the underlying severity in the populations.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, the reason I went off the floor is to try to remember how the 85%. But remember, we're paying 85% of an individual's coverage and 85% of his family coverage. And that is, of course, that's extraordinary. I mean, there aren't very many companies in the private sector that pay for the employee family dependents, and particularly 85%. These numbers are our contributions towards the employees' 85%. So that's the maximum we would pay towards the employees' 85% obligation. And in the situation where you take the line you're talking about there is $600 for employees who elect family coverage, that would be we'd pay 85% of that amount. To the extent that there's somewhere you see $1,200 for the employee electing employee with a dependent child, that would be the total, my assumption is, both for the employee and his dependent child coverage, and we would pay 85% of that total amount, not to exceed the $1,200. But it is true that when you begin to look at our employee package, our compensation plans, you have to consider the quality of health care that we provide to our state employees as part of the compensation plan, and we do. We actually, it's not fair just to look at the salary alone. You have to look at the salary, and we provide 11.5% retirement. On top of that, we're paying both the employee and the employer share. We're providing 85% or a wonderful insurance policy, and 85%, we're paying 85% of the premiums.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman. And a lot of employers would pay 100% of the employees. That's what we do in the private sector. And we may pay 50 to 80%. So those percentages are not so much out of line. But I think maybe the high cost of maybe the type of policy that they have in which you're offering the state employees compared to what the private sector offers in terms of copay, deductibilities, and those kinds of things.
Senator Larson.
A few years ago when we went to 85%, the reason given for that was because we were getting into a position of adverse selection. Has the committee ever requested a report concerning employees' health care, whether that problem has been eliminated, whether we accomplished the goal we were striving to accomplish with the adverse selection, or are we just paying it and now it's over so we're forgetting about it?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer that question directly, I can't remember a report recently, but the Appropriations Committee may very well have been getting it. I've only been on it for a month or two, but I remember soon after we started down that road, we did, as the entire legislature, see reports for a couple of years. And indeed, it began to have the effect that we had intended, and that is healthy individuals who were on the family plan were no longer leaving. And going into the private market or perhaps with a spouse's employers in order to get health insurance. They were staying in the state group health insurance, which is good because these are healthy individuals. And one of the other reasons, Mr. Chairman, that the price is a little bit higher, in addition to the ones that were mentioned, which are quite valid, of course, is that the state does not have pre-existing condition policy. And so it does bring folks on regardless of any kind of pre-existing medical conditions, whereas an awful lot of the policies in the private market do have those conditions in place.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sort of on this point, the year after we put in the 85% insurance payment, we created a task force or a select committee. I can't remember what it was. I had the opportunity to chair that task force. It was made up of members of the Appropriations Committee and, I believe, members of Labor Health. And we took a good look at that. We did find that, in general, we looked at all employee benefits, compared Wyoming to other states, and this is about 4 or 5 years out. But we found we were very, very generous, not just in health care but also in retirement, more generous than any of the nearby states. We also looked specifically at the issue of the 85% and determined that, yes, indeed, it had been instrumental in keeping people on the plan, but the first assumption that the plan was somehow approaching a death spiral because everybody being healthy was leaving was really over-exaggerated, and the plan had been actually much healthier. And we didn't save the plan is what the conclusion was by going to the 85%. Yes, we did keep employees on, but the plan was not anywhere near in jeopardy. And that's all I recall. There is, that report is written, and it's around here somewhere.
Like all the others. Senator Nicholas?
Another question. Next item on the budget is to move over to the You know, I just want to make sure I clear it. On page 49, I did move past that, but paragraph D is the retirement or the payments that we're making to the retirees who retired before July 1, 2008 for their health care benefits. Paragraph E is the one, is the payments we make after retirement. That. So then moving over to endowments on page 51, JAC put in two groups of endowments, $4 million for the university and $4 million for the community college. The with respect to the university or the community colleges, they're going to Casper College, Laramie County Community College, Northern Wyoming Community College, and Northwestern College, $1 million each. Those are all colleges who have used up their matching dollars and have the seem to have the capacity to go out and utilize those dollars. Any questions? If not, that takes us over to local government appropriations, section 338 on page 52. First item is $3.5 million to be go through to the SLIP board to match the private oil and gas company that's prepared to put up a like kind of money for the infrastructure needs of the town of Wamsutter. Then there's $4.7 million being put into the SLIP board for emergency capital project grants to local governments. You'll recall that we had a couple silos where we put money in, and this year we're putting more money into the silo for emergency large capital underfunded grants. Any questions? If not, we go into the AML funding. This is where I described that we'll be seeing, and we are now seeing, where the AML dollars are being appropriated. I think it was pointed out to you, if you look at the handout that I handed out this morning, on that sheet, there is the allocation of how we're going to receive AML dollars and what's available from year to year. It was a sheet that looks it says AML funding estimates, and according to that, in 2010, we would have about 99.4 million dollars to spend. We're required to do our maintenance of $30 million each year. You see the maintenance payment over on lines 11 and 12 on Senate File 1, so that's it's not actually $30 million, it's $29 million plus, and that's for abandoned coal mine reclamation projects that DEQ does on an ongoing basis, and they'll have to do that for several more years to go. The next item, 14 through 15, is $89,000 for the mine subsidence insurance program, and that's for premiums. We're finding more information about that, but my understanding is right now is that is essentially to help fund an insurance program where you have to pay a premium, and so you have to get in because insurance companies don't provide that. So I'm assuming it's a subsidy to create an insurance program for you to get into, but we'll find out more about it. $2 million for the solid waste orphan sites. That's those are sites where there's no responsibility for a third party. And there are something like nine old petroleum refinery sites throughout the state where there's nobody that owns it, nobody with primary responsibility. And previously we were paying for that reclamation out of the bond forfeiture funds that were collected by DEQ when they would assert fines. Those dollars are now going into the school accounts as a result of changes that we made in the legislature, so they lost that source of dollars, so now they're making it up here for these projects. The next item is $1,033,000 for the one-time projects. These are for the Upper Green River Basin ozone research. That's to set up the program to monitor. We've talked about that this morning at $947,000. There's an oil and gas field inspector that's being added under there at $87 million, and that gets up to your $1.3 million. Lines 24 through 26, 7 is the $4.1 million. This is for to set up the meteorological stations that will in different sites of the state and to address the entire air quality of the state. We have the presentations on it if you'd like. We've talked a little bit about that. But it's the Energy Development Air Quality Assessment Program. It's, they describe it as a comprehensive statewide air modeling and monitor system. The next item over on page 54 is $35,000 for Environmental Land Quality Division for expenditure on one-time projects. This is for solid waste compliance inspections and inspections. And this is also non-recurrent. The next item, the $135,000, is for recycling studies, one-time projects we talked about a little earlier. $10 million is being added to the joint labs, the biosafety level 3 labs that we talked about. Below is $734,000 for CO2 storage sites, EPA sequestration regulations. This is more dollars. Those go to the state geologists for those programs and projects, essentially to continue our work on CO2 carbon sequestration storage. Down below item number C, going down below, we have the dollars that can be utilized up to 2010, $30 million to the School of Energy Resources for the UWGE Clean Coal Partnership Project to be located. I think it's in Laramie, isn't it? That's what I thought, too. Maybe we had better put an amendment on there and get that there. The next item over on the top of page 55, lines 1 through 3, is $10.6 million to the School of Energy Research for clean coal technology research recommended by the Clean Coal Task Force. You recall we put in general funds of about $5 million several years ago. Those dollars have been spent through, and this expands that research. $1.9 million to the School of BBOT Energy Resources for uranium research. Below that is the $8 million for the School of Energies for CO2 sequestration research and demonstration, $2 million to the College of Agriculture Reclamation Ecology Project. There's an amendment coming on tomorrow, $1.5 million that is intended to be for an endowment for these reclamation ecologies projects to begin endowment fund. $500,000 is for operating dollars. Now, with a lot of these dollars that are going to the university, part of the problem is if you use AML funds, you have an ongoing reporting requirement forever. In addition, you cannot use the federal AML dollars to match against other federal grant dollars, and we're trying to get professors and others to go out and secure grants. So at paragraph D on page 55, we're allowing the university, with the approval of the governor, to go and say, look, we will substitute some of our block grant general fund monies or other dollars for the specified AML dollars. Then in that swap, they take the AML, apply it to Project X. So I suppose if you have $1.5 million to go and do a specific project that's general fund, you can move those dollars into the specified AML projects, and then the AML dollars would then backfill. We're just trying to stretch our dollars and make sure that we can match other dollars. And all the funds right now have to be expended by 2010. I think there's amendments tomorrow, Mr. Chairman, to address that and extend it to 2012. But right now, that I stand for question on the AML funding. No questions, Mr. Chairman. I turn over to the next item is the retirement system appropriations. We've talked about that on several occasions. You'll recall that we have a $150 million liability that's created by the rapid increase of salaries that we gave to teachers. What we're doing here is saying that we put this into the audit account. We're asking for a full replication audit. Once the full replication audit is delivered, if the governor decides that the amount of the underfunded liability is at least or up to $150 million, he can direct the auditor to make those transfers to the retirement account. And at line B, we're appropriating the $175,000 for the cost of that full replication audit. If there are no questions,
That takes us over to Section 341. This is the $250,000 for the Bighorn Base of bus service to help subsidize that. And we've talked that on, that was the subject of a bill that But you can say it loud enough so that our colleague can hear it. Then the next item, Mr. Chairman, Section 342 is the federal mineral royalty dispersion for endowments. This is the, well, with respect to the higher education endowment funds, because of the shortfalls in our revenues, we are going to see a shortfall in the existing obligations. So we're allowing, we're diverting up to $3.8 million of FMR revenue that would flow into the school foundation program. We're going to count, we're going to intercept that to contribute to the school endowment reserve account. And the with respect to the Hathaway account, we believe there is enough money, and we did intend to address that by making sure the treasurer has some bonding authority or some interfund borrowing authority. And I don't remember seeing that amendment. We have to make sure it's in there. But with respect to the next item is the in-car supercomputer, Section 343. That's on page 58. This allows the expenditure by UW of up to $3.5 million of monies that we've previously appropriated of the $20 million to be utilized for architectural A&E services for the supercomputer center. But no question, that takes us to UW capital construction amendments. In these amendments, this is just a restate Section 319 to allow some unexpended funds to be utilized for other purposes. Over at page 60 of the unexpended unobligated portion of the appropriations that are identified under that one footnote, and this is the School of Energy Resource Facility. That facility is not going to be as large as they originally anticipated, meaning they're not going to need the entire money or the amount. They had about $20 million. I think they're only going to need about $10 million. So of that, they were releasing $3 million to complete the University Athletic Challenge account. That'll finish out all of the work, except for, I think, it does not include the tennis courts. They just never found the matching dollars. And then the balance goes into the block grant for the endowment matching the and we have the reversion clause. And then of that amount over on page 61, we're allowing them to spend up to $1.4 million to acquire that south parking lot. But what we're saying there is that you cannot spend more than, with respect to our dollars, you're limited by the appraisal. If you want to pay more than the appraisal, then you need to collect the, or you need to pay for that out of your block grant or other sources you might have. And any questions on UW language? If not, that finishes the Section 300s. I move for the adoption of Section 300s.
Any further questions on Section 300s?
Or call for the question.
All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt the Section 300s, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
The last item is the
Section 300s have been adopted. The next section for consideration is Section 400.
Senator that is Nicholas. The effective date. I move call for the question on that. Move it and call for the question.
Any further discussion of Section 400? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Section 400, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 400 has been adopted. The next, then we're back on the original legislation.
Mr. Bill. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that if you had amendments, you had to have them in 10 minutes ago. With that, if there's any further questions, I'd call for the question of the bill.
You've heard the question. The question is on Senator Nicholas's motion that Senate File 1 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion's carried. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report with respect to the action taken today in the Committee of the Whole on the budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Mr. President.
reading clerk read the committee of the whole report?
Mr. President, with respect to the budget bill, Senate File 1, the committee of the whole took action as follows. Section 1, adopted. Under Section 2, Sections 1, 6, 7, 10, 15, 20, 24, 27, 33, 39, 40, 45, 48, 49, 51, 57, 60, 66, 67, 72, 80, 85, 101, 125, 135, 205, 220, and Section 33 were all adopted. Then Section 2 was adopted. Section 3, under Section 3, Section 6, 27, 57, 67 were adopted, and Section 3 was adopted. Under Section 4, Sections 302, 303, 337, 338, 339, 340, 341, 342, 343, and 344 were adopted, and Section 400 was adopted.
Senator DiCaria.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the entire committee of the whole report on the budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Messages from the House.
February the 10th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution 7, U.S. Constitutional Convention, repeal. Ayes 42, no 17, excused 1. Third reading passed, amended. The bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 236, School Finance Instructional Facilitator Program. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill Number 237, Name Changes Sealed. Ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. House Bill Number 249, Public Education Accountability. Ayes 32, noes 27, excused 1. House Bill Number 299, School Facilities, Budget Process, Substitute Number 1. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. February the 10th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, third reading failed, Mr. President. The bills listed below failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 168, Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility. Ayes 23, noes 36, excused 1. House Bill Number 218, Hathaway Success Curriculum. Ayes 29, noes 30, excused 1. And House Bill 269, School Finance At-Risk Funding. Ayes 28, noes 31, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 10th, 2009, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 22, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I make the motion, just a thought about tomorrow. There won't be much of a second reading, and third reading is not long, and so we'll have considerable time to work on the general file, and that's, as you see on the board, starting with those House bills 67 through 88, and if some of that we'll be moving pretty rapidly, I hope, with some of the House bills. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Announcement, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 1 Judiciary will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S1 to consider the following House bills. House Bill 72, County Jails, Release of Information. House Bill 261, Mandatory Savings Accounts for Inmates. And House Bill 285, Mandatory Minimum Sentences for Sexual Abuse of a Minor.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the regular committee room. House Bill 92, Long-Term Care Partnership Program. House Bill 271, Medicaid Speech and Audiology Services.
You've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February 11th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed, and the Senate is adjourned.